Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm and author of Investing Simplified, the book. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial show in America, with a financial advisor, an estate planning attorney, and a CPA to answer your questions for free, and is broadcast live from Portland, Oregon on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck with a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com. Or you can call him right now at 503-417-9595. That's 503-417-9595. Or for our long distance and podcast listeners, you can call toll free at 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
Good morning, Portland and the Great Northwest. You're listening to Investing Simplified. Other shows talk and talk and talk. This is the show that actually answers your questions. Pick up the phone, give us a call. You got a question about investing, you got a question about taxes, you got a question about the law. We have the answers. We have in studio with us this morning, Kevin Steggy with the Baker Coastal CBA firm.
Hello, Chuck.
Oh, Kevin. And Carl Jepson is on the line in between his activities he's doing this weekend. He's actually going to call in and talk from afar.
Ah, very good.
So all three of us will be here to answer your questions. So if you have a question, Carl will be able to hear it off air, and he'll be able to answer it as well. And we're going to get right into investing, because if you if you're an investor, you've seen a lot of volatility of late in the market. You see it ongoing all the time, and I kind of want to clear this up, because a lot of people, a lot of shows are saying one thing about the economy, and actually, if you have common sense, now this is what common sense is. Okay, common sense is if you see an electric fence, you don't grab a hold of it. It'll kind of shock you, you know? And if you have a stop sign, it's kind of good if you stop at the stop sign. You don't drive through it. Wouldn't you agree, Kevin?
Sure.
Okay, that's kind of common sense. Common sense is when the government's telling you 2 and 2 adds up to 5, that you actually have the ability to think, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. How can that possibly be? Well, look, when we have a jobs report of 38,000 new jobs, and over half of them are part-time jobs, folks, we are in deep trouble economically. And we've been saying it on our show for some time. I'm going to go through some numbers here with you, and I like to repeat these numbers. I do them all the time because I think this is probably the only show, it's the only financial show I know of in the country that tells you the actual truth about what the economy is doing. Now, there's a lot of other shows that do, and I've heard a couple other ones that do, but very, very seldom do I hear any of them really get into the numbers. And I want to get into the numbers because if you have any common sense at all, you're going to listen to this and understand that investing has changed. It changed on 12/31/99. You know, like there's a song called "The Day the Music Died." It's the day the stock market died, and you got to understand what's going on in the economy. If you don't understand what's going on, you'll fall for anything. You'll buy any song and dance. And I don't want you to do that. I want you to be the common sense guy who says, wait a minute. If it's too good to be true, it probably is. If 2 and 2 is adding up to 5, I've got to ask more questions. You've got to do that with your own life. If you don't, well, you know, it's buyer beware. Listen, here's the facts of what's going on in the economy. The Dow Jones closed yesterday on June 10th, 2016, at 17,865.34. If we go back to when the market crashed the day before, 10907, it hit a high of 14164. So since that high, not even considering the big dip, the market is only up 3.01% per year. Now, if we go back, and this is the fallacy about blaming other administrations, you know, you have to be accountable for what you do. If you're in office 8 years, you can't blame other people. You can, but common sense says you're asking everybody to grab that electric fence and have faith in you that it's not going to go off and shock the crap out of them. And it probably is. So here's the facts. The Dow Jones closed on 12/31/1999 at 11,497.12. So for the 15 years, 6.25 months, it's up 3.57% per year. Now that's 50 basis points better than from when the day before it crashed till now. So you do the math. It would sound to me like the better economy was prior to the crash than after the crash. You've always heard totally different than that. You hear it on the 6 o'clock news every night. It's called brainwashing. Don't get brainwashed. The NASDAQ, here's a big lie in the economy. And anybody who's invested, if you don't know this, if you've been suckered into this, you need to wake up. If you go back to 12/31/99, the NASDAQ stood at 4,069.31. The NASDAQ closed Friday on June 10th at 4,894.55. For 15 years, 6.25 months, it's up 1.26% per year. Now, as Paul Harvey would say, what's the rest of the story? Here's the rest of the story. On March 15th of 2000, the NASDAQ crash. Anybody out there ever heard of the tech bubble? Well, if you invested in tech stocks, I guarantee you know about the tech bubble. And if you had a 401k in 2000, I guarantee you knew about the tech bubble because the majority of the people in this country were investing in growth funds, NASDAQ funds, and you had money in technology. And it went down the tubes. And here's the fact. That crash on March 15th of 2000 never recovered till August of 2015. Think about it. Just think about it. 15 years and you got snookered. You never heard that on the news. You heard it on our show. We said it. I say it every week. But on other shows, you never heard a thing about it. You know, talk about stupidity. This country, we let these news people tell us how to live our lives, what's going on in the economy, and we don't open up our eyes and look around us. Drive around. Look at the buildings that are half empty or half full. You can say half empty, half full. It doesn't matter. The fact is, they're half occupied. That's fact. Now, if you take a look at the S&P 500, the S&P closed at 2,096. The S&P, if you go back to 10907, it was at 1565.15, so that's an average of 3.91% per year for the 8 years, 8 months. The problem is, you're talking about an index that the 80 years before the turn of the century did 10%. 10%. Now let's look at the S&P closed on 12/31/99 at 1469.25. This is the biggest crime of all, because when you hear President Obama say that this is the best recovery, it is an absolute lie. It is a blatant lie. The S&P 500 for the last 15 years, 6.25 months, has a real rate of return of 2.75%. Folks, that's an index that did 10% the previous 80 years. If you think this economy is going, look, prior, I'm going to give credit here to a lot of different presidents, but the fact is, up until 1999, the growth in this country was about 3-4% consistently year in and year out. This country was growing. We were moving ahead. In 1999, when the music died, and by the way, Bill Clinton was still president. He didn't leave office till January of 2001. it's always been amazing to me that you got a president that's been in office for 8 years and created all kinds of havoc all over the world because of his sordid affairs in the White House while he was should have been attending business for us. He was fooling around with people, and then got us in trouble with the Islamic world, and he's the guy that did it. And then everybody blames George Bush. It's insane what we do in this country. It's absolutely insane. And this is not to say Bush, because listen, I'm not a Bush fan either, so don't get me started on Bush, because I tend to be conservative, and I think Bush was too liberal. And I think Bush sent our boys into war, and he should have had a plan. And I think any president that sends our young men into combat should have a definite strategic plan to get them in and get them out. We have too many wounded veterans in this country that this country's turned their backs on and just not done the right thing for them. And any American needs to look in the mirror and say, you know what? Are we going to start taking care of our vets? Are we going to start taking care of the people who really defend our liberties? We need to start doing it, folks. We really need to do it. And you need to start telling these politicians that blah, 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 blah. All they do is talk to get money for themselves. I've said it. I said it 8 years ago when we went on the air. I said, you show me a poor politician, I'll show you a first-termer. And boy, is that ever true today. These guys are all getting richer. The rest of us are getting poorer. It's just a fact of life. And I think it's time to stop it. I hope we do, and I hope we all band together to stop this kind of stuff. But listen, if you're an investor and you don't have a strategy for the next correction in the market, you need to get one, because I think it's coming sooner than later. I can't tell you when. My crystal ball doesn't work. I've tried and tried, Kevin, but I can't make that darn thing work. But I can tell you, if you just look at the volatility of the market and you look at what's going on in the country, you have to ask yourself, why is it ABC, NBC, CBS, and Fox, the local Fox, none of them ever report what's going on both sides of the table? They only report one side. Listen, we already have the Pravda News Network. It's called ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, and CNN. They report the government mantra. The government mantra doesn't tell you got people burning the American flag, waving the Mexican flag. We're at war with Mexico. We just don't know it. We just don't know it. There's organizations that want to take California back. They want to take Texas back. They want to take New Mexico back. They want to take Arizona back. Hey, we better wake up. One day, when they have the votes, and we're letting them vote without even registering, one day you're going to find a vote that says, hey, we're going to annex California from the United States. What do we do then? Let them annex it? Well, I don't know. The drug cartel will probably be pretty happy. Anyway, you're listening to Investing Simplified. If you want to talk about investing, you want to ask me a question about this, I'm here to answer. I have no problems in answering those questions. Give us a call. Pick up the phone. Call 503-417-9595 or toll-free 877-733-1011. And this is what I would say to you. As the Boy Scouts say, be prepared. Always be prepared. If your portfolio isn't prepared, you maybe need to take a look at a different strategy. We'll be right back with Carl's comments. You're listening to Investing Simplified.
Hi, I'm Carl Jepsen, estate planning attorney and co-host of the radio program Investing Simplified. I recently left the Warren Allen Law Firm to open my own office. Professional and personable service have always been the hallmarks of my practice. I believe that this move will allow me to spend more time with my clients. For more than 37 years, it has been my privilege to assist clients with practical estate planning with wills, trusts, powers of attorney, advance directives, and other documents so that they may have peace of mind knowing that their affairs are in order. When probate becomes necessary, emotions of family members may become fragile. Having an experienced attorney that can empathize with what the client is going through makes the process much easier. My new office is conveniently located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 101, just across from Mall 205, and my phone number is 971-229-0585. That's 971-229-0585.
Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepsen, estate planning attorney, with Carl's Comments. You can call Carl now at 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's Carl Jepsen.
All right, send lawyers, guns, and money.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. I'm calling long distance today. So, Chuck, are you in the studio now still?
Absolutely. We're right here, waiting with bated breath to hear your every word.
Well, okay. After your discussion, I'm feeling pretty dull here. Anyway, my comment today is really one of practicality, I think, in terms of estate planning. It kind of sparked me going to a class the other day. Every year, the various probate courts in the area of Multnomah County, Washington County, and Clackamas County put on a seminar, and they usually have judges and probate administrators and other lawyers and things like that who make certain presentations, but it's basically the status of the courts. And one of the interesting things one of the judges gave were some statistics about how many judges there are based on the population. And this is not just probate, this is judges, period. And Multnomah County has one judge for every 20,000 people in the county. Clackamas County has one judge for every 30,000 people in the county. Washington County has one judge for every 40,000 people in the county. Now, if you want to think about that, how many disputes do you think you can get out of 40,000 people? That's a lot.
Wow. Carl, speaking about that, I heard a thing on the radio the other day that said that the United States has more attorneys than all other countries combined.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised at all that that's the case. We are a law and regulation driven country, and there's when I started law school or got out of law school, the Oregon revised statutes were like three volumes, and they were you could take up about a foot on the bookshelf, and now they're like 22 volumes, and they take up like 3 feet. And that doesn't even count the regulations, and the federal stuff is even greater. When I got out of law school, the Internal Revenue Code was in one book, in one paperback book, and now it's like four, and they're 4 inches thick and very single spaced with very tiny print, and the regs are even worse. The regs, well, Kevin can tell you this, the regs are like 8 volumes or something like that. They'll take up practically a whole shelf on your bookcase. And there's more coming. And that's just the IRS. I mean, if you start throwing in all of the other regulations and stuff like that, I'm absolutely convinced that there's not one lawyer in this country that doesn't do some, business or real estate transaction or, conduct some kind of legal business that doesn't violate at least one federal regulation without even knowing it.
Why don't they appoint more judges and clean up all the bottlenecking of this process?
Well, I reckon it's because some people think that bike paths are more important than judges.
Whoa.
Is that a political statement from Carl?
I can't believe it.
No, I mean, it's just a matter of priorities. No, there's no political capital involved in hiring judges or court staff. That is, at least until you have a dispute. And then you have a problem. I mean, remember, my thought has always been that the ultimate goal or the ultimate reason for lawyers in law is to keep us from shooting each other. At the end of the day, we have a way to resolve disputes between individuals and companies and governments, and it doesn't involve any violence. And that's what kind of is the glue that holds a civil society together. So long as that everybody honors those things. Now, obviously, there are exceptions to that, but nonetheless. But it's just not a glamorous thing to say, oh gosh, we gotta put in some more judges and stuff like that. Because I think a lot of people are law abiding and they don't get involved in the legal system that often. You know, for those of us lawyers who do it all the time, you know, it's not an uncommon thing. But I think, you know, most people are law abiding and they don't get run afoul of the law unless they, you know, get involved in various kinds of transactions. But generally, most people don't even see lawyers for very often, you know. So, and yet the complexity of doing business and doing transactions and paying your taxes and, you know, just about everything we do is very, very regulated. And it's very challenging to try to figure out what regulations apply and where they come from. And I can guarantee you there are a lot of times that there are things that are done that, you know, there are all sorts of regulations that you go, you're kidding. There's a regulation that says that. I mean, it's quite amazing sometimes. So, you know, just the amount of stuff that we try to keep up with. And that's one of the reasons that I used to be kind of a door law sort of guy. I used to, you know, do whatever came in the door. But now I pretty much have limited myself to estate planning and probate kind of work simply because, you know, number one, I wanted to be, you know, really fluent with one area of law, but also because you can't keep up with all that other stuff. And all of these other things do relate, you know, they're estate planning and probate relate to taxes and to real estate and, you know, contractual matters and all that. So you still have to have essentially a law school education to do it, but it's not nearly as broad as just saying, okay, I'm going to take on just about any project that comes my way, because that's really hard. So anyway, that's kind of what my thoughts are, at least on the legal part of it.
Okay. Well, Carl, we've got a bunch of callers calling in, and so we better take some calls here. Perry's got a question about a lending club. Perry, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How about you?
Pretty good. Thank you. I've actually been approached by a friend asking about joining her in this called a lending club. There's another one called Prosper. And what I understand is basically it's a club. It's similar to a bank, but of course it's not FDIC insured, where people who cannot borrow money from banks, they borrow from individual investors. And I just wanted to know how safe or I know it's insecure, but they do check their credit rating and such. And I know myself, I was trying to get a loan for $25,000 with an $80,000 bank account, and I couldn't get it. So my question is, how safe is it, and can it be considered an investment tool?
Well, Kevin, I'm not sure about the these aren't investment clubs. What they are is you're borrowing money from other people. Are you pledging any collateral, or are you just you're lending your money to people against some of their investments?
My understanding is we basically put our investment money into a pool, and people who need money borrow against it. And there is some collateral depending on what they want to borrow the money for, but a lot of them it's like paying their student loan and such.
Well, who's going to manage this, and what kind of fee are they going to charge to manage it and lend the money out?
It's the 1%, and it's called Lending Club.
Kevin, are you familiar with this at all?
Well, I've heard of some things like this, and you know, I would say it would be an aggressive investment on your part, Perry, in that there's a lot of risk. And you know, you'll be putting your money in, and if, you know, you could make 8-10% probably. I don't know what they're promising on the return. You know, you'd really have to vet the organization. I haven't heard of this particular one. And of course, if your investment goes bad, you can write it off like any other investment. But I would say it would be a high risk investment with the potential of, you know, 8-10+% interest, I'm assuming, is what they would pay back to you on a either a 1099 or a K-1. So I would say if you're really interested in it, a small amount of money that is play money, as Chuck would say, I certainly wouldn't have significant important investments in that.
Yeah, I definitely would not put any money that I had to have for in the future into something like that, because for one thing, if a securities broker or a registered investment advisor like myself was involved in something like that, you got a ton of liability, and that almost sounds like an unregistered security to me.
They are registered with SEC, is what I understood.
They actually have a prospectus or a red herring or a printout that says they've been approved by either the state or the Fed.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I would tell you to get it in writing, and I'd have somebody like myself or somebody look it over for you, because I don't think so. I don't think that would be approved by any agency I'm familiar with.
Okay. So it's pretty risky, bottom line.
Oh, yeah. Bottom line is very risky.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Carl, did you have a comment?
Well, I totally agree. I think that there's, for one thing, there are a huge number of, I was just talking about regulations, and banks and lenders are highly regulated. And this is essentially an informal kind of deal in a way. And like you said, there's some securities. It strikes me as one of those things that could have a potential for the investor to lose their money, just like a kind of a Ponzi scheme kind of thing. Because, well, for one thing, you don't know how they're doing the loans, and certainly there have been what we call hard money lenders all the time. And more often than not, they're an individual who has some extra money, and they loan it out to people at a higher interest rate than anyone else would, than this person could, than anybody else charges. But mostly because they take higher risk loans, and they try to secure them and all that stuff. But a lot of those folks, it doesn't take but a couple of big loans to fail on one of those things when the whole portfolio falls apart. So I would be very nervous about putting my money in it.
Yeah, I certainly would not put any money that I had to have in it. Okay, thank you very much, Perry. Appreciate the call. We also got
appreciate it. Bye-bye.
You bet. We've got Rob on the line. He's got a question about taxes on the sale of a second house. Rob, you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I love your show.
Thank you.
Even though sometimes it depresses me.
Well, we don't want it. We want it to be real, not depressing.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I have a condominium that I just sold, and we lived in it for 18 months out of the last 5 years. Now, do I get the tax write-off?
Chuck's looking at me, and I'll take this one.
Yeah.
There's a number of things to cover to properly find out how much, if any, you can exclude on this sale. At first blush, you probably are entitled to some, if not all, exclusion. As a married couple, and it was your principal residence, you owned it 2 out of the last 5 years. Lived in it 2 out of the last 5 years, you get up to $500,000. If it's any time less than the 2 out of 5 years, if, like you're saying,
18 months,
then you can get a prorated exclusion if you meet certain unforeseen circumstances, which guidance has shown that there's any number of things that will qualify as an unforeseen circumstance, from health to a child moved into the state and you needed to move to them next, whatever, what have you. They're rarely challenged. So, and it also kind of depends on, you may have some tax liability if you depreciated it After 2009, I believe, is the kind of cutoff date. So there's a number of dates to work through, but I would say you do have some exclusion available to you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't depreciate it at all. My brother-in-law lived in it, and
okay.
he didn't pay rent, so.
Okay.
So,
Okay. Well, it sounds like you've got a, you, do you work with a tax person to kind of help you?
No, I generally do my own taxes, but this is kind of confusing me.
Yeah, well, you might contact Kevin and have him give you help with it.
This one is a bit confusing, and there's a number of things to go through. But once it's laid out, it should give you this is one where I think a tax professional can give you more of a tax benefit than he's going to charge you, and save you some headache of reading hours of law and making sure you get it right.
And more importantly, save you a lot of money.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm looking for. I'll give Kevin a call.
That sounds very good.
Very good.
Rob.
Thanks, Rob. Well, Carl, we're gonna take a quick break and come back with the tax investigator. And Carl, hang on the line there because we'll be coming back to you as well.
I'll be here.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Colson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Colson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercolson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercolson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Colson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask Kevin Stege, CPA and shareholder of the Baker Colson CPA firm, that tax question that's been keeping you up at night. You can call Kevin 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's the CPA with the tax answers, Kevin Stege.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified, and we welcome your calls. Thank you for the prior ones that just called in, and we would like to, what spurs our show, 503-417-9595 or 877-733-1011. And Carl, if you're still there, this segment here of the Tax Investigator, we might have a little back and forth, a little Tom and Jerry, a little Cheech and Chong or something here regarding entities and the difference between the legal formation and the taxation of these entities.
Ooh, well, that's nice. I mean, I was thinking, you know, whenever I hear entity, I think, you know, I'm thinking Star Trek. You know, there's the...
the Federation?
Yeah, you know, the entity always enters the starship and they got to get it out of there.
Oh, right? I see. More of a life form entity.
A life form, yeah.
Okay, well, I think some of these do take on a life of their own. But before we get to that, I just wanted to briefly cover what the CPAs around the nation, how they view the U.S. economy. There is a report that comes out each quarter, and it's called the CPA Outlook Index. And they go through about 8 or 10 different areas and poll hundreds of CPAs in all manner of business, public practice, and private industry to find out what their take is and their feel for the upcoming 12 months of the economy. Revenue, profits, employment, IT spending, capital spending, training and development, and it's not very favorable. And I don't want to be depressive, but a year ago, the about 80% of CPAs interviewed in this poll indicated that they had optimism for the U.S. economy, and that was the first quarter of 2015. The first quarter of 2016, it comes in at 47%. Every quarter, it's been a steady decline and then a huge drop. So for some reason, CPAs around the country are being a little hesitant about where the economy is going. But that is just one factor among many, I believe. So with that said, let's talk about our entities here. And Carl, the reason I'm bringing this up, and I know we've touched on it before, I get appointments almost every week regarding how a person should start a business. And that's kind of where I'm coming from, is what's the difference between a legal setup and how that entity is taxed. And there's a big difference in that. And so I wanted to start briefly by saying there's one, two, three, four, there's about five different ways that an entity can be taxed. We've got the sole proprietorship way, which is also called what the IRS likes to call a disregarded entity. And that shouldn't affect your self-esteem. You're still a viable business, but it's basically you are the person being taxed, and that's a sole proprietorship. Then there's partnership taxation, which passes out the income between two or more people, or in some cases, it's an entity that's a partner. Then you have the corporate way of taxation, and under corporation, you have the S-corp and the C-corp, and the S-corp is taxed like a partnership. It passes out the income. The S-corp does not pay any tax, while a C-corp is its own taxable entity and pays a fairly high rate of tax on the bottom line at the end of each year, and the corporation actually pays that. Then you have your tax-exempt entities, and you also have estates, and those are the ones I'm going to limit it to. There's many more different things, but we'll limit it to that.
Kevin, one other thing about that, there's the LLC, which Limited Liability Corporation, and a lot of people think that is a tax shelter or tax savings, but you still got to pay your taxes.
You just stole my next line, Chuck.
I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, is there something missing from what I just said?
Yes.
And that's an LLC. And why is that? Because that is not a way that something is taxed. It is a legal setup. And an LLC can be taxed in multiple different ways. And it's how you choose to be taxed and how you're set up. And Carl, the LLC is where when people want to set up an LLC, which I do recommend in many cases. In fact, I'd say more than 50% of the time, it's a great way to go because you can be taxed as a sole proprietorship. You can be taxed as a partnership. You can be taxed as a C corp, an S corp. So you get to choose those things if you set it up right. And Carl, I think you work a bit on the legal aspects of the limited liability companies. Is that true?
Well, absolutely. I've over the years, I've set up many of them, both corporations, S-corps, not many C-corps, really. C-corps usually are bigger corporations for the most part, not always, but sometimes. But and LLCs, and I don't get into the actual taxation part of it. That when it falls on your desk is what comes into it. But they're all more or less set up in a similar fashion. There's some kind of organizing document that gets filed with the Secretary of State, depending on what the entity is. And then there's usually some kind of internal document that governs the management and the running of the corporation or the company. In a corporation, we would call those the bylaws. In LLC, we would call it the operating agreement. But they do kind of the same thing. And the document that you file with the corporation is more like a constitution as opposed to the statutes that run the company.
Exactly. So when a client comes into me, usually the first question is, should I set up an LLC? And I generally, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, well, I don't care. How would you like to be taxed? That's what I care about. LLC is you need to talk with your attorney whether you want to set up an LLC or not. But in general, LLCs are pretty good ways. They're fairly simple. I thought I would just give one or two facts on the benefits of each type of corporation, or each type of entity. So a sole proprietorship, benefit of that, there's simplicity. You file it on your 1040 tax return, usually as a Schedule C. It's very simple. Partnership, very good for holding real estate or those type of assets. Never want to put real estate in a corporation. Almost never. Never say never. But that's usually not a good thing. You're going to be looking at taxation if you ever have to pull that property out, even without selling it. In S-Corp, the benefit is you can avoid some self-employment tax if you structure it right and you're not greedy. But what is it? Pigs get fed, hogs get slaughtered. So if you pay yourself a little salary, you can take some other income out of the corp, the S-Corp, called distributions, which aren't taxed according to Social Security and Medicare. C-Corporation, benefit is very good employment benefit write-offs, even for the owners, even for the majority owners. So if you have a need for a significant write-off that would be part of employment benefit plan, then a C-Corp could very well be the way to go, such as the health insurance, medical, cafeteria plan, those types of things. And so those are kind of a summary of the different entities and how they're taxed.
Great.
I agree.
Yeah, very good. Well, yeah. Listen, if you got a question about that, pick up the phone, give us a call, 503-417-9595. Our toll-free, 877-733-1011. We're going to take a quick break and come back with Investing Simplified and the Knowledge Stress. The three of us are going to go around and around about something. We just got to figure out what that's going to be. We'll be right back.
We do Investing Simplified.
Hi, everybody. Chuck Price, the financial doctor here. If you're between ages 58 and 68, choosing Social Security benefits at the right time is one of the biggest financial decisions you'll ever make. You get one chance to get it right. After 12 months, there are no do-overs. 74% of Americans receive reduced benefits. Get your free report on 44 Social Security secrets at pfgwm.com. Social Security is often one of the largest and most mismanaged assets in your retirement income plan. Claiming benefits sounds easy. So is leaving up to $250,000 of your money with the government, or reducing your benefits up to 76% over your life expectancy. For this vital information, go online to pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
We do Investing Simplified.
Investments, tax questions, or legal concerns? Get them all answered now for free. Call Chuck, Kevin, or Carl for your answers. Call 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's the Knowledge Trust.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. I do want to give a shout out to, we had a caller, George, called in and asked a question about residential and commercial real estate going back to 1999. And in all honesty, I have no idea because that's not my area of expertise. But I do know somebody who can give me answers to that, George. So on our show, in an upcoming show, I'll actually have a real estate expert come in and we'll talk about those numbers and relate them to the stock market over the last 15 years. And I think it's a very interesting question. What has appreciated better? Because I think right now real estate might be winning the game. But listen, Kevin, you brought up a great, great topic for us to all talk about, and something that Carl and I have talked about several times, and I know you have too. We've all discussed it. But I kind of relate the LLC conflict. In other words, if you're going to put a property in there, you want to keep it owned individually so you can get the capital gain, right? Capital gain treatment is way better than ordinary income. And if you have a crash and you lose, you can write off the loss. Well, I kind of feel the same thing about retirement plans. I tell people over and over again, I look at people come in with the retirement plans and they've got stock or very aggressive investments in their IRA or their retirement plan, and they're saying because of the appreciation. Well, if you have money saved in addition to your retirement plan, listen, folks, buy the stock in your own plan, not in the retirement plan, because if you hit a home run, you can take capital gains. It's way less tax. And if you happen to strike out and you lose, you can write the loss off. I'd much rather write a loss off than have nothing to write off and have a depreciating retirement plan.
That's right. Your IRA, your 401k, everything that comes out of that is ordinary income taxed at your highest rate. And, you know, with the 0% federal capital gain rate for taxable income for married couples under about $75,000, that's a lot of 0% income to recognize on your return. So I think that's a significant planning deal. What would you recommend then for somebody to invest in their retirement plan, if not stocks or aggressive investments?
Well, again, it depends on their age and it depends on how much money they have in their retirement plan and what other assets they have. Hopefully they have other assets besides their retirement plan. But we do got a question here on a caller on the line that has a question about what to do with 401k. And I didn't see a name there, so I'm...
Hello, caller. Are you there?
Yep. TJ.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
TJ, you got a question about your 401k plan.
Yeah, my question is, I mean, what's the average person supposed to do in their 401k when the economy tanks? So, you know, I'm limited to, you know, the large cap, mid cap stocks, you know, your target date retirement funds, there's bond funds, there's a stable capital preservation fund.
You sound fairly young. How old are you?
Well, I'm not that young. I'm 55.
Okay.
In my 401k, I mean, it's pretty much all Costco stock, and it's about, you know, half a mil.
And do you work for Costco?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I don't know where to put the money if things start going bad. I mean, you know, you can't take it out, so I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do.
Well, here's the thing I would say to you: you're 54. Are you gonna work at least 10 years longer?
Yes.
Okay. I personally would tell you to keep the Costco stock because you work at Costco. There's a very, very big tax advantage, Kevin, that I'm sure you're aware of. That if you own company stock and you have it in a retirement plan, there's some advantages you can do in that stock when you retire. Like pull the stock out and pay some of it capital gains. And so there's some distinct advantage if you're going to do that, although it sounds like to me that you have an awful lot of money in one stock.
Yeah, it's all Costco and the 401k. And then, you know, my house is paid off. And then, you know, on the side, you know, I've got quite a bit of Coca-Cola stock. And that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I still think because, you know, you got 10 years or longer to retire, I think we are going to have a correction in the market, but I think it's going to take a 7 to 9 year recovery. So 10 years or longer, I think you might be in good shape.
But what if he's worried about like a Enron or, you know, a PGE type scenario where you're fully invested in your own company and, you know, is there any way to diversify
we typically recommend that you not have more than 10% of your portfolio in one individual stock, just because of diversification and crap happens. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you'd have told, I mean, I had a lot of people at Enron when we told people to get rid of Enron. I actually had one of my clients tell me to shut up and not tell her to sell her Enron because she had worked for the company for 32 years. She trusted them more than she did the financial statements. And she knew the people there were doing the right thing. Well, they weren't. But the fact is, that's a lot of money to have in one individual stock. So I think if I were you, I would share that down, put some of that money into some of the funds that you have. And being where you got 10 years or longer, doing a target plan out for 10 years, but fully understand that we're going to have ups and downs. And right now, if depending on the 401k that you have, if you have a money market account, I would be maybe shifting some money into that money market account right now and then dollar cost average, and you're still putting money in every month in your plan. But I'd have that money sitting there in a money market account. When we had a dip, I'd be shoving that money into the market.
Okay.
Because you've got 10 years here to create wealth. And I'm telling you, there's going to be some great opportunities over the next 2 to 3 years if you have the cash to take that money, move it into the market, and make some very, very good returns.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks. Good call.
And that's and that can be a tough one, Chuck, in that he's limited to whatever options his 401k plan offers.
Well, one of the scary parts, Kevin, is the DOL recently came out with a ruling, and the DOL ruling is primarily about retirement plans. And some people think, and I certainly have of the opinion, too, that the government is trying to get financial advisors and investment people out of the very small 401ks and the individual IRA accounts, because there's about a $17 trillion block of money there that the government would like to have control of. And I think they're going to make it so that guys can't financially make a living selling those products and services, so they're going to get out of that, which is going to turn it over to the government, and the government's going to say, here's a government plan you can put your money into. And many states have already started coming out with, and I don't want to say there's a plot, but it kind of makes you wonder when states are coming up with small 401ks and IRA accounts where people can put their money into. So I think the retirement market's going to change drastically over the next few years. So we're going to see, you know, we're going to see what happens there. But back to our idea about stock in a retirement plan. I normally do not like doing it. However, there is some advantage if you work for a company and you own company stock to take it out of your 401k and take capital gains treatment. I'm sure you're aware of it.
On the time that you retire and break service from the company.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's some definite advantage of why to own stock if you work for a good, reliable company to carry that stock in your 401k plan, because it can be a really great tax advantage if you have – it's kind of like converting from an IRA to a Roth. If you have the cash outside your retirement plan, it's a wonderful thing because you can take that capital gain in the stock. Instead of being all ordinary income, you can turn it into capital gain, but you got to have the money to pay for it outside to transfer the stock out.
Pay for the taxes.
Yes. Outside.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a Roth conversion. If you don't have the cash to do a Roth conversion, normally we don't recommend it.
In other words, the general framework is they're trying to say, hey, this is almost like investments. Part of your compensation was this employer stock that was given to you. We want to give you some capital gain treatment, or I think you can elect a bunch of it, give you some capital gain treatment on this since you were kind of, in a sense, forced into it or a part of your compensation was. So we're going to give you a little better tax treatment on it. And it's not always the right move, but it needs to be looked at.
Well, we have some clients with a couple of companies that I think are really solid, strong companies, and I think Costco's a very strong company too, but that are in a situation similar to this young man's situation, and I would recommend hanging on that stock, although I don't like having that much of my portfolio in one stock. That's what I'd be scared about, but having some of it in that, you know, maybe 20% in his case, because it is a good, very good company. But taking advantage of that capital gains is going to be worth a lot of money to him down the road at retirement. You know, just like we were talking about, taking capital gains versus taking ordinary income, there's no comparison.
Yeah, and at half a mil, I think he said, that's going to be a fairly, you know, in conjunction with his other income and stuff, he's going to be in a fairly decent bracket. The ordinary income rate's going to be fairly stiff on him, so capital gains would be a boon for him.
You could be talking an $80,000 to $100,000 difference in his net, and that's some serious money on a half a million.
Yeah.
So yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, Investing Simplified next week. We're going to probably have Rodney Johnson from the Dent Research. I haven't got a confirmation yet if it's going to be Harry or Rodney, but I think it's going to be Rodney. And so we welcome you to give us a call next week. Tune in. Kevin, how's somebody get a hold of you?
We are at baker-colson.com, 503-666-5569.
And Carl?
I'm at 971-229-0585 and carljepsonlaw.com.
And you're located?
At 555 Southeast 99th Avenue.
Boy, that new address is getting tough to get off the old tongue there.
You know, the 971 telephone number has taken me forever to even remember that one.
Well, listen, we'll be back next week with Investing Simplified. May all your investments work great for the next week. Thank you very much, and have a great week.
You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified or sign up for our free newsletter at www.pfgwm.com. This show was brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000 or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. How often do you have a checkup? Annually? Only when you're not feeling your best? Or are you one who waits until there is an emergency condition? High blood pressure, rapid pulse, or sleepless nights could be the result of your investment portfolio or no estate plan. But there is a specialist ready to offer you a checkup on your financial health.
Hey, Gene, Dr. Price. Hey, Gene, Dr. Price.
Chuck Price, the financial doctor and author of Investing Simplified, is offering you a free financial checkup. Whether you're asking for a second opinion, a complete financial physical, or investment stress test, Chuck Price, the financial doctor, can help diagnose your money ailments and prescribe a prudent path towards healthy investments and peace of mind. Call 503-253-3000 to schedule your financial checkup or on the web at pfgwm.com. That's pfgwm.com. You'll feel better.